Hello, this is Kevin Barrett of Truth Jihad Radio. Please go to truthjihad.com and subscribe so I don't have to play commercials like this.
MK Ultra 5.0, celebrating its 80th year in the mind control business with over 10 million users already unknowingly participating. Be among a projected 9 billion users. Choose from among any number of the 146 MK Ultra programs
you paid for.
Experience the deep black agenda of the new world order gone wild. Vaccinate your kids today and they too can join with the millions who already now enjoy
psychotropic pharmaceuticals,
torture,
water and sound cannon,
voice of God technology,
covert harassment,
disassociation,
schizophrenia,
false flag terror,
chemtrails,
and Fox News. Indulge in all the fear and insecurity. Forget who you are. Join the transhuman agenda and the all-new mind control dystopia with MK Ultra 5.0.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, waging the Truth Jihad since 2000, well, I guess about the beginning of 2004. It was right about this time of year that I seriously embarked on a study of 9/11 after having learned that David Ray Griffin was looking into it and not liking what he found. So it's been a very interesting ride, and one of the people who's been along for that ride and actually kind of a bit of a mentor and somebody who got there a little bit before I did in some of these areas is my guest today, Ole Domegaard. Ole Domegaard is the website Light on Conspiracies, and he's well known for having investigated and basically solved the assassination of Olof Palme, which the Swedish Prime Minister, which led to a whole lot of other assassination exposures. So today we're going to talk about false flags, another of Ole's specialties, and particularly the Christmas action we had this year, where right around Christmas we had both the assassination of the Russian ambassador in Turkey, and then we had the Berlin truck attack, the ISIS radical Muslim attack on Christmas, everything but taking Santa Claus hostage and beheading him. It sure looks like a public relations stunt from the usual suspects, but I didn't dig deep enough into it to be sure what happened, though I did see a couple of the suspicious points. But let's get the full story here from Ole Domegaard. Welcome, Ole. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, good to have you back. So this Berlin truck attack thing in particular looked very suspicious based on a number of things. First, they didn't ID the nationality of the suspect correctly for something like 24 hours, and then when they did, they said it was because they just happened to find the ID that he dropped under the seat of the truck when he fled. And then they shot him dead in Italy. Once again, dead patsies tell no tales. So just on that alone, you have to ask yourself, is this another of these brazen false flag incidents?
Well, as you know, I always think it's extremely important not to jump to any conclusions before really checking out the facts. But after this last year we've had, I mean, what can I say? There's been so many of these craft operations ongoing. And before we start, I would like the listeners just to think a little about when NATO keeps or holds their big exercises. Very often it's up to like 14 different countries, NATO members, including the US and so on, that are carrying out different operations as exercises. And when you look at these operations, I would humbly suggest that we're looking at the same type of thing here, because it keeps occurring in NATO countries or countries like Canada or Australia that are also connected with different security agreements and so on.
Well, a headline like ISIS attacks Christmas, a truck attack on Christmas market, I mean, the PR value there is obviously all in favor of Netanyahu and PNAC and the neocons, basically the people who've ginned up the so-called clash of civilizations. Any radical anti-imperialist or anti-Zionist Muslim would know full well that doing something like this doesn't help your cause. It obviously helps the other side's cause. So as long as they've got the media to portray this as a radical Muslim attack, then, it's obvious that they can get away with that. And it's just one of these who gains things. It makes no sense at all that there would be any radical Muslim that would ever want to do such a thing.
I agree. And then also, please keep in mind that ISIS went on a holiday, it seems like, during the US elections. The year was very intense with many different operations, especially here in the US, in Europe. And then when it got close to the elections, nothing, 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 nothing. And then on December 19th, on the exact hour more or less when Trump was sealed as the next president, boom, 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 three different attacks happened, more or less on the same hour. There was the truck attack in Berlin. There was a what they called a mosque shooting in Switzerland, and there was the alleged assassination of a Russian ambassador in Ankara in Turkey. All of them on the exact same time, more or less on the same hour. And exactly.
Wait, really? They were all the same day and almost the same hour?
Yeah.
Wow, you know, I'd somehow missed that.
No, it is exactly when it happened. When Trump was announced the next president, it was more or less, this, as far as I know, within an hour or two, all of these different things happened. So what are the chances there? I would say at least it's important to keep that in mind when you look at these things, that they could be part of either diverting the attention away or attacking this whole thing because of Trump or, and so on. But let's start with the Berlin attack. The official story is that a guy with a Tunisian background, just the same as in Nice in France this summer, that he hijacked a truck. It was a Polish truck, and it said that he hijacked this truck. He killed the driver, was driving around with the driver dead in the passenger seat for a few hours. And then in the evening, there was a Christmas market in absolute central Berlin where he, for some reason, thought, okay, I'm pissed off, I'm going to kill a lot of people. So he entered into this Christmas market with this big Scania truck and just slaughtered 12 people and injured around 50 other people. And then after about 100 yards, the truck came to a full stop where it said that he jumped out and left the truck. But so that is the official story. The time was 8:02 p.m. in the evening. And so right away after this happened, when these things happen, I check the exact location, which is almost always very symbolically important. Also, the time, was it a specific date, just like you said, very close to Christmas here. Also, there's another, one of these other countries that have kept having repeated attacks is Denmark. And just a few days before this happened, a Danish police officer with the last name of Christmas was gunned down. Very unusual with the shootings in Denmark, and especially at a police officer. And it was just like they said that he was standing right outside one of the main police stations, and this guy just ran out and shot him dead in the head. Anyway,
it sounds like there's an attack on Christmas theme going here.
You will see there's a whole long line of Santa Claus Christmas thing going on all the way to Fort Lauderdale. So that's why I wanted to start with that. Okay, so the first images that came out from RT and other sources, the truck had, they changed the color in Photoshop or whatever, so that the truck, the whole back of the truck looked like it was a wrapped parcel in gold wrapping. And there's especially one photo, you know, many times they have like these staged psyop photos connected to these things. Because one, there's an alleged attack, that's one thing, but there's also a massive psyop connected to most of these things. And so it's very important to keep that in mind as well. And there's especially one photo where you've got the truck in the background with it. It looks like golden wrapping around it with a tie, a bow tie almost in the background. You've got the Christmas tree lying there down with a star. And then there's somebody that looks like Father Christmas walking around, but dressed in white, but it looks like with a white beard and one of these.
Otherwise known as Santa Claus here in the USA.
Santa, sorry, what did I say?
Father Christmas.
Okay, Santa Claus.
Yeah. Le Père Noël in French.
There is a Santa Paul at the Fort Lauderdale attack that is being interviewed. But okay, Santa Claus. Otherwise, so what I do is I always, you know, try and look at the evidence, what really happened. And once again, we have CCTV footage turned off, and the film footage that comes out there is super blurry, dark, more or less impossible to identify anyone. And there was one photographer, a journalist, a German journalist, that was there 90 seconds after it happened, because you can see the camera just passes over one of the church towers nearby. You can check the clock, and if you sort of go backwards time-wise, you will see that he started filming about 90 seconds after it happened.
Well, I hope his name wasn't Gutjahr.
No.
He's the guy who was pre-positioned on the balcony in Nice for that truck attack, and then he showed up less than a week later for an attack in Munich, Germany, on the shopping mall, and he was right there when it started too. And he's married to Einat Wilf, the Mossad, the top level Israeli black ops person. You know, you just can't make this stuff up. But I think they retired him.
They can't use him anymore. I mean, he was too exposed by these type of shows here. And also, one of the main people that was interviewed and mentioned after this attack was his daughter. You know, so both daughter, wife, and him super involved. I would say, no, the guy that filmed this
was like family business.
Yeah, keep it in the family. No, the guy who filmed this, his name is Jan Hollitzer, and he's the online chef for the Berlin Morgenpost. And the thing is that this happened right in front of one of the most important symbols of Berlin. It's the Kaiser Wilhelm Memorial Church. It's like a ruin from that was more or less the only standing building after the Second World War, when the center of Berlin was bombed into gravel. And this tower has been there, and it's the symbol for the strength of the population of Berlin, how to recover and regain strength and so on. And right next to it, they built a super ugly new type of church, obelisk type of church right next to it. And this happened, the truck came to a full stop right outside this church, so that many of the photos that was taken had this church in the background. And some of these photos, like I said before, when you look at them, the clock in the background is 11:11.
Really?
So,
wow,
yeah,
they're really working on their iconography.
They do this all the time. I mean, when they killed this French priest last year, the same church, it was the wrong church that they said it was then the one they were killed. So the photos were of the wrong church, and the time was 9/11. And this keeps repeating, 666, 9/11, 7/11, 7/7, and so on.
Well, wait a minute. 7-Eleven is a convenience store.
I know, but these numbers keeps repeating.
Wow.
7 and 11 as well.
Well, so they got these iconic photos of a Christmas present wrapped truck that looks a Christmas truck right in front of this iconic church, symbolizing Berlin's resiliency in the face of horrific, invasions and attacks. And of course, that's what's going on now, is the clash of civilizations, the horrific invasion and attack of the evil Muslims. We're attacking Christmas and shooting Santa Claus.
But here we have the real color of the truck. Is really, it was black, contrary to the one in Nice that was pristine white, not a drop of blood anywhere. This was black. And then with the whole trailer, the long trailer that followed the truck, it's silver, not gold at all. It's silver colored. Anyway, so there is a bit of a problem here, because the truck is said to have entered into this Christmas area, this Christmas market thing, and they're turning to get in there and do what it's said to have done. You cannot make these turns with a truck like that, because it would just have crushed the huts on the left-hand side or knife-jacked the truck. You can just not do it. It's not like a normal car that you can sort of like go like zigzagging with. The end of the truck does not move as much as the front, so it's not easy to maneuver like this.
Yeah, especially in these European cities. Many of my American listeners may not be aware that European cities tend to be a little bit less easily maneuverable by big vehicles. The streets are a little smaller. Last time I saw you, Ollie, was in Berlin, so I remember those streets. I'm trying to remember that location, but I'm not succeeding.
No, this is super central, and it's a main street. I'm talking about in it. It says it entered into where the Christmas market was, which is up on the pavement. you know. And they had these like huts where they sold glee wine, mulled wine, and Christmas cookies, whatever. So to get into where the official story said that the truck entered and then kill these people and get out again, you cannot do that maneuver with a truck the size of this. And also, the whole area where this happened had these metal poles, you know, to stop people from parking or entering. And these are hardcore poles. You cannot, I mean, if you drive into them, you seriously damage your car. And here, right behind the truck, I mean, we're talking like half a meter, like 3 feet, behind the truck is one of these metal poles standing right up, not damaged at all. The front of the truck, no blood, no body tissue, no pieces of cloth, nothing. And no dent or marks after having officially driven right across this metal thing. It's impossible. And witness that there was especially one cafe owner who was on TV being interviewed afterwards. He said that he thought that the truck was reversing into position, and this is exactly what it was, I'm telling you. Because these metal poles that are there, they're people that have been on location afterwards, filmed where the truck was said to have exited, and the poles are there. You cannot go out that way without totally knocking them over and destroying your vehicle.
Mm. So how would the truck have ended up in the location where it was photographed?
It just drove on the main street and reversed into position. And all the debris that are lying there, once they move the truck, you will see there's hardly any debris underneath the truck. All the debris, I would suggest, came from inside the truck. When you see the footage they started filming right after this happened, there are four people in the street stopping the traffic, diverting the traffic. So the area is sort of more or less isolated for this incident. Then you have their police cars and their ambulances arriving before the alarm is sent out, according to the German authorities. And you will see they're walking around very calmly, putting out the debris around the truck, not the other way around. Then you have the guy who was filming this 90 seconds after it happened. The camera down, very blurry footage as usual, very dark, very hard to see anything. And you will see people walk around like old ladies with their handbags. This is 90 seconds after more than 60 people is said to have been hit and massacred by this truck. You can only see three people injured, and they're sitting there being comforted by people. That's three people.
Now, this is really strange, Ollie, because in today's world of ubiquitous iPhones that have low-light photo capabilities and everything, you would think that something like this would be massively covered, that the internet would be flooded with pictures of this stuff.
Not if the area is sealed off. That's the whole thing. You will only see the same footage, the official footage being sent out. And Like you say, I had a guy in Berlin. I'm so fortunate now that I have people in most countries that I'm in contact with. So if something like this happened, I can just ask them, please, can you go on this location, film from there, take a photo from that angle, check this thing out, and so on. So I had people there just a few days afterwards who did the exact same route as this was filmed. The same lighting, everything. Their footage, super sharp. You could see all the details. So this is... somebody has put an effort into blurring it as usual. This is standard. You see the photos taken, the still photos of the police and their things, it is super sharp. But as soon as it has anything to do with victims or any way you can identify them, blurry, blurry, blurry.
Now, how would you respond to people who say, well, that's because the governments and the news organizations have this protocol where they say it's impugning the dignity of terror victims to show them. And this was the excuse that we heard in France when they actually went and arrested Hisham Hamza, who had posted online the famous Bloodheart photo from the Bataclan nightclub, the one that's on the cover of my book, Another French False Flag, which you're, of course, participating in. And that photo, which did show ostensible victims littered around the floor of the Bataclan nightclub with his huge heart smeared in blood, that photo was the only photo we got of any of the victims from the Bataclan, and it was tweeted into existence out of Israel. And when Hisham Hamza, the investigative journalist, discovered who had tweeted that photo into existence, that is the, you know, this is the chain of possession of the photo, so he published an investigative report about that, showing the Israelis linked to a U.S. neocon think tank who had done it, then he was arrested for, quote-unquote, impugning the dignity of terror victims because he reproduced that photo in his report on the chain of possession of the photo. Now, the French government theoretically should have gone after the Israelis and the U.S. neocons who had apparently produced this photo and first disseminated it. But instead, they made no effort to do that. All they did was arrest Hisham Hamza for his investigative report about who had really committed this ostensible crime of showing victims in a picture. So anyway, the point of that little digression was that it seems that in France, at least, it's illegal to publish or disseminate any such picture of this kind of incident showing an identifiable terror victim or even a body at all. Or you could be arrested for impugning the dignity of a terror victim. So could that possibly be one of the reasons why we're not seeing a lot more pictures?
You tell me. Where? I mean, there are lots of photos walking around in this video right after, but they're like walking arm in arm, you know, they're not even looking at the truck. And if since there's only three victims, you can see three victims being taken care of, okay, that means that there will be like 57, at least 57 people underneath the truck, because we're talking seconds after this happened, and there's no moaning, no blood, no anything. Nobody's even trying to get close to the truck or climb in under, crawl in under and pull people out. Nothing. People are walking around, dead car.
Remind me, how many victims were there, dead and injured?
There's officially 12 dead and about 50 wounded.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And you would think that would be pretty well covered by pictures, and you know, people do paste stuff on Facebook and stuff. I don't, you know, we haven't heard of the government somehow stopping people from disseminating these photos. So it is very strange that there's an absence of any quality photos of any of this.
I tell you, after the New Year attack that happened very often, I would humbly suggest that all of these attacks are connected. Through NATO, Gladio, and the different intelligence agencies.
The usual suspects.
It's the same. It's dead boring after a while. But Mossad's presence is super here. It's there very much. I'll get to that. But also, please remember that we're talking about a stretch of about 100 yards in total where the truck is said to have entered in, killed all of these people, and gone out. So the people interviewed, when you look at all the other false flags we've gone through, media, people that are connected to media, have an incredible tendency of being among the victims being interviewed. And here we have it again. Like, for instance, CNN and BBC were on location before German media managed to get there. That is pretty impressive, I would say.
Indeed.
Then among the witnesses that were interviewed, we have this the guy that filmed it, let me just see his name again. I forgot that.
Jan Hollitz. Right, not Gutjahr, but what was his name?
Not Gutjahr. But then we have from the UK a journalist there called Emma Rushton. You have another one, Shandana Durrani, who's one of the editors for Google Images and also a travel journalist. Then you have there's another woman who came, she was nearby, and she came and was afterwards, she was in media saying, oh, it's so horrible, she's Finnish. But she was connected to the press corps of NATO, but from the Finnish government. And her Facebook profile that she just changed today is her standing blurry image on that exact location with thumbs up. And then, hold your horses, here, what are the chances that the most respected Israeli terror expert, globally as far as I know, he's a professor in politics and terrorism, Shlomo Shapiro, he was there and walking around for about an hour. He was doing research in Berlin, central Berlin. I don't know what, because normally he's working at the university in Tel Aviv. But he was there, and he left just before this happened, got on a bus, and was just about to leave. The bus was just in the area, so he heard the sirens of these vehicles coming. And so he didn't really know what happened, but as soon as he came back to his hotel room, the phone went mad. And then afterwards, he's been doing multiple interviews in German media.
Well, that's a great opportunity for him to put out the Israeli spin on this.
And then, I mean, these type of things, what are the chances? Like, you have the Copenhagen shooting that I, on your show, among others, predicted 1 month before on the exact date and time. It was 1 month after I predicted it, but exactly on the same day and hour and location.
And that was the follow-up to the Charlie Hebdo attacks of June 6th, I think, 2005. And then it was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2005, that your prediction came true, Ole, and there was that Copenhagen attack.
2015.
15, yeah.
Okay, but when that happened, Swedish terror expert, I mean, this is Shlomo Shapiro's colleague, but in Sweden, what is a guy like that doing exactly on location in Denmark, where you will see that the Swedish presence was very, very strong in these different operations, including Mossad and so on. His name was Magnus Ransdorp. He showed there up there very close to this, and he was just there for some business. Yeah. But this is, you will see this keep repeating again and again. Netanyahu on location at the 7/7 bombings in London, mm-hmm. Giuliano as well, the former mayor of New York, who was very central also in the 9/11 attacks. And they're just there. What are the chances? 100 yards and you have all of these people right there. And then always, I would say, when these things happen, they are, if they're crisis actors, they're transported in buses from, I would suggest, army bases, NATO bases, and so on, where American or NATO bases flown in big army planes, then transported in buses on location. They do their stuff and then they're transported away in these buses. So the buses will keep repeating. And you will see that it's not just a bus nearby, but the bus is sort of being led in through where the blockage, where the police is blocking off the road and so on. The buses are let in and let out, and often with propaganda messages on them. And here we have a yellow bus, a bus that is one of these jump on and off tourist buses, a big yellow one that right after this happened, you can see on the dash cam footage, the bus is there. And then it's standing there for almost at least 24 hours with hazard lights on and also covering so you cannot see into the area. Part of covering the whole thing up and then transport in and out people. Also, the fire brigade or the people in fire brigade uniforms came in a fire brigade bus that I don't know if that is normal that they have buses, but in this one they had. You will also see there's dash cam footage of a cab driver where they say you can see suddenly the cab is standing waiting at a red light, and then you see this the silhouette of this truck coming very fast from about 40 miles an hour coming from the left and just passing and supposedly entering into this Christmas market. But when you really study the footage, you will see that the truck just passes. It do not enter into where it's said to have entered.
So they could just rev up the truck and, you know, get that film footage. And then essentially they're parking the truck where they're saying it exited.
They're parking. Yeah, they went up with the truck and reversed it into position. You cannot exit there. They reversed it into position,
okay.
And then they knocked out the front window with, it looks like a sledgehammer, just boom boom. And then they stuffed the things into the window, so it looks like that was what destroyed it. But you will see that what is sticking out of the window is like a soft Christmas tree and some other garbage that would not be able to crush the window at all. Hmm. This is so set up, so it's ridiculous.
So this would explain why, when they have to choose a patsy, they have some planted ID, and then they just have this guy executed in Italy, dead men tell no tales. And there's no need for a major investigation or, you know, interrogation or anything like that. It's all solved.
And also, I love these IDs that keep you, well, you know, how many times have we seen the ID? I mean, when you do one of these suicide missions, bring your Kalashnikov, bring your black clothes, bring your ISIS flag and the balaclava, and don't forget your ID. Don't forget your ID. That is part of the basic suicide mission equipment.
And this time, and they apparently forgot that it didn't make a lot of sense for the guy to try to escape. If he's going to try to escape and cross borders and stuff, you kind of would think that he would not just throw down his ID under the seat of the truck.
And then the thing is that this guy, I love this ID, because this guy is said to have come as a refugee to Germany seeking asylum. And then while he was being investigated, this were like years before this happened, they say that he started doing a lot of criminal activities. So he was sentenced to 4 years in prison. Now, as far as I know, if somebody who's seeking asylum is doing things like that, he get deported because it's expensive to put people in prison, you know, so they would just kick him out. But here, no, he was 4 years in prison. And he came without ID, so they didn't know for sure who he was when he was put to prison. Then he was there 4 years. He came out, still not sure who he was. Then he traveled to multiple countries, at least three different countries, with fake IDs, they say. And then they find this ID in this truck where they say, okay, this is the guy. And also he has used six different aliases. So now they know for sure that this is the guy. And the ID was found underneath the seat in this Scania truck. But underneath the seat in that model of the truck, there's no room for anything. You cannot stuff anything there. But that's where they found it, they say. And then he left. He escaped, they said. And he went to Italy. He was approached by the police who did not know who he was. He was stopped by them, and then he started a gunfight, and they killed him. And then you see him, the police is standing around where he's been shot, and everybody's holding up blankets so you cannot see what's going on. Do you know, that is not the usual way you do crime scene investigations and so on. That 80% of the staff is standing holding up blankets so nobody can take a photo.
That's a common scene. It seems they screen the action, whether it's by parking buses in key locations or, you know, holding up blankets, getting things in the way, degrading the quality of the pictures. You know, all of this makes it easier to sell the official version. They don't have to make it too easy for people like us by actually, you know, showing details of what happened that would give the game away.
No, this is standard procedure. And then none of the names of the German victims, more or less, I don't think, at least it took a long time before any names of German victims. I hadn't seen more than maybe one. Instead, and also when you go to on location, this Christmas market, there's seven or eight memorial things built more or less identical, you know, with all the candles, red and white candles and some flowers. But it looks very similar, all these different age ones. I would almost say they're constructed, you know. And there's normally you see photos and names and letters to the victims, nothing except for one Israeli woman who is said to have been killed there. It's her and her husband, and then with an Israeli flag next to it. They keep repeating the photos of her. And then on the photo it says, or next to the photos it said, you know, goddamn Angela Merkel. There's a lot of propaganda in this against Angela Merkel for some reason. I don't understand it really. And then you have the only other photos are from the dead truck driver, a Polish guy.
Yeah, I wonder if the anti-Merkel propaganda is part of a strategy of tension, right? They're trying to stir up extreme tension, you know, with this new right wing in Europe, you know, against the evil Muslim refugees flooding the country, and that they can keep a lot of pressure on people like Merkel to try to make sure that they follow the correct policies, such as not going over to the side of Russia and China, among others.
I don't know the big plans. I'm on a street level more. I leave the
And then the Israelis, of course, are always trying to punish anybody who crosses their path. And recently we saw that UN resolution that they really hated. So they're out to punish the whole world right now.
Yeah, it's if you go against them or if you're pro Palestinian, it will hurt. That is for sure. Then you have the owner of the truck company. I mean, this is the first time we're starting to see these operations involving nations from the Eastern Bloc, you know, or Russia, Croatia, Poland. These countries have not been part or being blamed or aimed at before, but now there's a tendency, I would say, for going east. And the owner of the truck that was hijacked, they say, his name is Ariel Surawski, a Polish owner of this, but he was quite active in different Jewish conferences and so on. And I have a photo of him together with the Israeli ambassador to Poland, Shiva Weiss.
What are the odds of that? Just some Polish truck driver, just happens to be in the thick of things with the Israelis.
This is what I'm saying. If you look at it from above and you just see what are the chances and what are the chances of it happening right outside one of the strongest symbol of Berlin, because that is what they, the reason why they picked the Twin Towers was because that was the strongest symbol for the US. Why did they go in the Nice attack was on the Bastille Day, the most important national day in France. You know, they hit in right in the heart. That's what they're trying to do. Emotional. They hit you emotionally. And then it said that the first they arrested one guy. Where did they arrest him? Right outside the Statue of Liberty in Berlin, which is super, super central and very symbolic for Berlin. It's on postcards everywhere and so on. But right there in the middle of a big forest where there's a massive big obelisk with a statue on top of it, golden statue, that's where they said they arrested him. And once again, the Statue of Liberty.
Well, if you were a Hollywood scriptwriter, you couldn't do better than that.
And this is exactly what I would suggest, that what we're looking at, I've said that many times before, that this is like a global tour of terror. It's the same team traveling around, carrying out the same again and again and again. This is why the SWAT teams and police officers are running around with black masks on it. You know, they look like the terrorists, and I would strongly suggest they are the real terrorists.
They've got like SWAT team black masks, and then they've got ISIS black masks, and they just kind of, you know, switch them every now and then.
They look the same. And very often I would suggest, like in San Bernardino and so, and also at the Bataclan attack and so on, some witnesses said that the shooters were dressed in black military-looking clothes. And then the only thing they do when police arrives, they shoot, they hide, the police arrive, they put on the mask, and then they're taken out together with the rest of the police that looks like terrorists. It's a classic one.
Wow. So you think this Berlin thing was linked to the other incidents you mentioned, including the assassination, or you're saying dubious assassination in Turkey of the Russian ambassador?
What I'm saying is that the assassination of that, or the alleged assassination of the ambassador, I would strongly question. What I can say is that it was not a real event. But I think that this differs a lot from the other ones. And it's almost like this is also the first time Putin is involved, as far as I know. And it's almost like this is a Russian false flag played out at the exact same time as the thing in Berlin, maybe to defend themselves, because maybe they thought they were going to be blamed for it. I don't know, but what I can say is that this thing with a Russian ambassador, I put massive big question marks around it.
Okay, so what's the best evidence that it didn't happen the way we were told?
Okay, so it said that this was a art exhibition from it was in Ankara, very close to the Russian embassy, the American embassy, and also the parliament. And there was a photo exhibition that was said to have been dedicated to Kamchatka, okay, where it was. Turkish photographers taking photos of Russia, and this is why the ambassador, that this ambassador was invited to this. So he was standing there giving a speech, and so he had an interpreter next to him. And you would think that if this was such a big deal, then there would be a lot of people there, a big crowd, there would be photographers and so on. And yes, photographers, yes, crowd, no. There's only a handful of people, including one child. You look at this photo exhibition, it's dedicated to Kamchatka, they say. And if you look up Kamchatka, it is a sort of like almost like an island on the east side of Russia. It's even further east than Japan. And all the photos are more or less copies of Getty images, you know, all of them from Moscow. Really poor images. I mean, nothing. At a photo exhibition, it should be something, you know, like high quality, special things. But these are just like postcards. You can find hundreds of them, and some of them are almost identical to Getty images. Like one of them is from the St. Basil's Cathedral at the Red Square. There's a modern designed TV tower from Moscow. There's one from the Gum Shopping Center. Do you know, it's like, it's nothing. Okay, so you have this Carlo, he is giving a speech, and then there's a guy that almost looks like James Bond in the background. A suit, black suit, white shirt and tie. And the audience, the few people that are there, are standing in front of Carlo when he gives his speech and so on. This guy is in the background all the time, being filmed, standing like a bodyguard, walking around in the background, standing white leg, you know, like exactly like a bodyguard. But he officially is an off-duty police officer. And then suddenly, without any warning, he just pulls out a gun and fires 9 shots into Carlo, it said. The guy, the Russian, he just goes down like a log, boom, falls down, does not move at all. No blood, no movement. He moves his right hand a little, that's about it. But what happens is also that there's a little movement. If you go frame by frame by frame, there's a little movement to the left of his tie, almost like a bullet had exited there. But there's absolutely no blood on his clothes, nothing. I don't know if it's edited or manipulated image, but that's the only thing you see. Then when he's lying on the floor, there's something sticking out of his vest, and it almost looks like one of these film things, you know, with a blood bag that should have detonated but hadn't. You know, so it's sticking up like 10 centimeters out of his chest. You can see it on all the different images. Also, when the guy is said to, you can see there's different angles of the shooting. You can see when he pulls out the gun, he's not nervous at all. He's just standing and suddenly he pulls it out. And the first gun, when you listen to the sound, the first shot goes off before he's even cleared it out of his pants or behind his coat. And then he fires 9 shots. And the last two, you will see that the camera soon fades in and out, pans in and out on him. And you will see the sound and the movement of him. The last two shots, at least the last shot, is fired with the gun aimed straight down. But there's no damage to the floor. There's no empty shell casings. Then there's footage taken of this alleged shooter from outside in through a window. But if you look at the art gallery, there are no windows.
Yeah, I saw some videos pointing that out. I was wondering if you know, maybe the problem was the angle, or is it really clear that there are absolutely no windows in that spot? And wouldn't that be obvious to anybody who knows that gallery?
At least he's not inside the gallery when that photo is taken. He must be out somewhere. But it said that he's in, and that is where he was killed as well. Then you have, there are different photographers. There was one French, there was one Turkish photographer. There was video footage and also a sort of like a TV camera type of thing. The TV camera is zoomed in on him all the time, and clear footage, you will see, boom, he gets shot, he falls, and he's out of focus. But what comes out as soon as Carlo goes down, you will see, like when they do these psyops, you will see there's two photos on the wall. One of them is it looks like somebody's kneeling, putting flowers on a grave, and they have a shirt on with the Turkish colors, and I would say the Turkish star and moon on his t-shirt. And he's putting down flowers in front of something. It looks like an old tree. Somebody has said it looks like a monster or demon or something like that. And then the photo next to him is of a massive big gun, a cannon, with three cannonballs, right? So you got like the cannon and the grave and the flowers, all of it, right when you're emotionally like, oh my God, he's killed, and that is what you're staring at. So I would say there's a possibility that that had been done on purpose. And also this cannon photo, you can find Getty images that are almost identical to that photo. There's nothing unique about these photos at all.
Now, are you getting these photos from sort of film of the exhibition, or are you getting them from going online and looking at the photos that they have listed online?
No, you go. What I've done is I've just enlarged every single photo in the exhibition and tried to find it, you know. And it's they're all from Moscow, but they're supposed to be from this island that are like 4,000 miles away from.
Yeah, I think Kamchatka is a peninsula, right?
It is a peninsula, right. But it's as far east as you can go. It's on the other side of Vladivostok. It's east of Japan, northeast of it.
I remember that from playing the geopolitical board game Risk when I was a kid. You have to take Kamchatka to get to Alaska, to invade Alaska and occupy Sarah Palin, take her captive, or whatever you want to do. Anyway, yeah, so that's very strange. So it's ostensibly a Kamchatka exhibition, yet there are no pictures of Kamchatka.
None. All of them are from Moscow, from inside a shopping center, from a TV tower, and so on. And then you have this footage of the guy after, because he was killed there. I mean, there's no footage from when he was killed, only when he's lying down there dead. And you compare the photo of the person who's lying dead there, he has not shaven. I mean, he's unshaven, and he's dark, quite dark skinned. He looks Arabic with big eyebrows and so on. And then the shooter who's running around, pointing up in the air and shouting, clean shaven and a lot paler. I would suggest not the same person.
Mm-hmm. Then interesting. Yeah, and that footage of the shooter, you know, shouting and shooting and all that stuff, that's really, you know, that's a very kind of iconic killer footage. It's, if they wanted to make a big impression, this is how they would do it.
It's James Bond. He's standing like James Bond. He's doing all of these different gestures. Very professional. He's not holding the trigger. He has his finger along, not on the trigger itself, which is the way you do it when you're a professional. So you don't shoot by accident. And then another photographer, one of the still photos, it's a Turkish photographer. I think his name is Nasim Kilic. And when you look at the photos taken at this thing, he's taken some photos straight from the front and then some photos straight from the side. Super sharp, I mean professional, super, but from two different positions. And very calm. This guy has just murdered somebody in front of your eyes, and he's just walking around taking photos from different angles.
Hmm. You've also got
quite a professional. You got also the video camera that filmed the whole thing. As soon as the guy starts shooting, he zooms out. The camera is shaking, but he zooms out so that it's wide angle, so that you get the shooter as well walking in and out. But who? I mean, to zoom in and out is quite a distinct thing. It's not just something that happens by coincidence, I would say. Is that if you're standing there and somebody gets shot right in front of you, is that the first thing you think about? Let's zoom out. But that is what happens. As soon as you start shooting, zoom out, and then you got footage going.
So, yeah, this is all very suspicious. It makes us wonder whether this could be some kind of Turkish-Russian false flag, as you suggested, Ole. I mean, my original thought was this was NATO punishing Russia and Turkey for getting together, but that could, of course, be Russia and Turkey essentially propagandizing for their getting together by, you know, we're going to fight the terrorists by having a terrorist attack on Russia and Turkey. And, of course, with the bonus that people like me think that the first suspect is probably NATO. And anybody who thinks that, you know, Putin and Erdogan are completely above ever doing anything devious like a false flag, I think really needs to get back into the real world. You know, Putin came to the kind of powerful position he's in right now thanks to the false flag Russian apartment bombings carried out by KGB, blamed on the Chechens. So I don't know. I mean, I could see that as being the most likely interpretation. But, you know, Oli, we only have 10 minutes left. And I think, were you going to bring in the Istanbul New Year's attack? Because it seems like that might be part of sort of this holiday wave of propaganda items.
I just want to mention before, when it comes to Carlo, the murder of Carlo, there's footage you can find on YouTube where you will see that his casket comes to Russia and there's people are waiting there, media is waiting there. And he was quite a heavyset man. You see that the casket weighs nothing. It's like a cardboard box. They're carrying out their fingertips. And when they put it down on a table, it's outdoors. When they put it down on the table, you can see it weighs nothing. It's empty. That is an empty box.
Just like the JFK assassination. The casket was empty. Remember that? The casket that they carried through the streets that everybody watched in Bethesda, Maryland, was actually empty because Kennedy's body had been kidnapped and surgically altered to make it look like he was shot from behind rather than from in front. So here we have another empty casket, apparently.
I can only say when you look at the casket, I mean, it weighs nothing. And this was a heavyset dude. So, but then you have the official funeral in this big cathedral, and it's an open casket funeral where there's somebody lying in the... So I am confused. I do not know. But and also I want to point out that, do you know the Illuminati card game?
I'm not really a card game player, much less an Illuminati player. I didn't even know there was one.
Oh, I tell you, this is such a bizarre card game. If you Google it, the Illuminati card game, it was a card game that was made by a company called Steve Jackson's Games, who has a logo of a pyramid with an eye right in the spot of it, in the middle of it. And in this card game, there's so many cards that over the years have turned out to be totally true. You've got 9/11 is there, with the Twin Towers, with the explosions. You got the Boston bombing. You got many, many others. And this, the last edition was printed in 1995. I mean, that is way before this happened. All of these things happened. And here, there is one card called Teflon Coating that is almost identical to the guy who killed the ambassador, Carlo, they say here. Same suit, same tie. He's standing there, same haircut, and he's standing in front of a podium with a microphone on it, Teflon coating. And I've seen several comments made by, I don't know who, I've been trying to get in touch with these people, where they commented on the truck in Berlin and Nice as Teflon coated trucks. So I don't know what that is. And then a few days later, there was another Illuminati card game, a card that was exposed called Backlash, which is almost identical to the Teflon coating one, but where the guy who's shot, it looks like he's been shot. You know, he's got like blood and stuff in his face. So I have no idea. I just know that there's some bizarre things going on in this whole thing.
Wow, very strange. Well, now we have 5 minutes left, and are we still missing an attack here?
Oh, God, yeah, I can go on and on, because Fort Lauderdale, absolute crap, and the Istanbul nightclub thing also, once again, I mean, it takes like a few minutes, you will see that there is, they say that this shooter in Istanbul, that he was dressed like Santa, running in, shooting, killing a lot of people. Then it turns out that it's actually the Turkish police that were undercover, dressed like Santa Claus. They've done that 2015, 16, and so on. They go undercover in Santa Claus outfit.
Sounds like more war on Christmas iconography here.
It is strange. And then in Fort Lauderdale, which, I mean, the whole thing is just so poorly pulled off. You got the guy that they claim he wasn't even on Air Canada's flight. You got people very scared running in, both from the departure hall and the arrival hall, same people. You got one guy that looks bizarre, to say the least. His name is Santa Paul, and he's got neon green pants on and a red, no, the other way around, a neon green t-shirt and red trousers and a massive big dog. And he's in the background again and again. He's even been interviewed as Santa Paul talking about these things. And when you go frame by frame, you will see that some of the images have been totally distorted, where they put a Christmas Father Santa Paul, no, Santa Claus mask on the video footage. It's very, very bizarre and strange.
And there were witnesses who said that there was, even after they had arrested the guy that they blamed for this, there were multiple shooters still shooting.
Well, what else is new?
Right.
This is the thing. And what I was very strongly suggest is that so often you see like a crowd come running. Oh my God, everybody is scared. Well, the only thing you need to do is fire a couple of blanks off in the air, and somebody starts screaming, he's got a gun, he's got a gun. Then everybody will start running and you just film them. Doesn't mean that they're part of an operation. It just scared people.
Right.
We just, an hour ago or so, there was another alleged shooting in Mexico this time. Exactly the same. And you can hear an English guy coming running. He's got a gun, he's got a gun. So everybody's running.
So you can turn a crowd of people into unwitting extras in a false flag production just by yelling, he's got a gun, and filming them.
That is it. That's it. I mean, the only thing you need to do is stage. I've seen they've even done this. I think it was in Brussels. They did just for fun. They had cameras all around a city center plaza, and they staged a thing like that where they started shooting and ambulances were coming, and the people were just standing around like, oh my God, and hiding. Everybody thought it was for real, but it wasn't. It was just staged, candid camera. But here, instead of selling a product, they're selling fear.
Well, they're certainly doing a good job of that. They're selling vast amounts of fear to the global public, and a lot of it seems to be aimed at fearing the Muslim menace and thereby getting on the side of the Israelis, who are our last bastion of defense against those evil terrorists. But then there seems to be a fair bit of sort of random fear generating going on just to keep people in that state where they can be manipulated and feel powerless. But, you know, speaking of feeling powerless, I think I'm powerless to keep this thing going as long as I would like to, because I'm sure you have even more to say about some of the details about these things. But we hit the end of the hour. So, Oli Demigard, we're going to have to bring you back before long. Hopefully there won't be too many more of these things. Unfortunately, it seems like they're just ongoing, so we'll probably have to bring you back fairly soon.
Anytime, Kevin. And I just want to say the thing that happened in Jerusalem, absolute staged again.
Okay, so we covered that one too. All right, well, thank you so much, Oli Demigard. Keep up the great work at lightonconspiracies.com. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.